welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
And I'm Beth Newell.
And here we are again, for those of you joining us for the very first time. Boy, we're parents and we're married and we've got kids. They're two and they're four and their names are Maven and Bryn. That's the backstory. Beth, this was quite a week. I feel like a lot of things happened. The biggest one for me, I think, was pre-K parent night at school. This was surprisingly emotional for me. How was it for you?
Similar. It's everything with preschool is like, seems like such a big milestone and so intense, and then simultaneously like so not a big deal when you're doing it.
Yeah.
So it was like, I don't know. I think I was telling you the other day when we first found out he was starting preschool, it was like, I felt anxious to meet the teacher because I think in my mind it was like, okay, we're meeting this authority figure. We have to like live up and be good. And then you meet this woman who's like younger than us.
Well, you were worried about what she would think of us?
I still am.
Wow. Well, yeah, boy, I had the opposite.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is going to be great. I get to show off.
Yeah, I mean, my first thought when before you meet the person, I'm like, I hope they're a good teacher. I hope they're not crappy. But as soon as I got into that classroom, and we're all sitting in baby chairs because it's a pre-K classroom, instantly she starts talking and, you know, years of school come back where I'm like, it felt like the first day of school where like I'm nervous to talk to other people. But there's like this weird competitive thing in me where I was like, I need to be the best listener, the best student. I sat up front.
Well, that's sort of where I'm coming from, but like in a different way, like because I'm used to being the shy kid growing up, and so it's really weird to live through this stuff with Bryn as your son, who's like the most outgoing person ever, and running into like teachers and school administrators who are like, oh, you're Bryn's parents. We love Bryn. And it's weird because I think we both simultaneously were like, yeah, of course you do. Like, he's so social and funny. Like, it's bizarre to have that reaction when people say that. And you're like,
What was your relationship with teachers, like, in general, going through school? Were you, I mean, because you can be hard to read and quiet, and I'd imagine some teachers didn't get you and, like, maybe thought you had an attitude or misread you in some weird way?
Yeah, it was like a mix of, because I was, like, quiet, like goody two shoes mostly, but like also is quiet in sort of like a spacey way. So a lot of teachers loved that. And then some teachers just hated it.
Yeah.
Specifically like in like elementary school gym class, like if we were playing volleyball, which is an incredibly slow, boring sport to play with kids who can't keep a ball in the air. It's like,
and boy, you hate nothing more than arbitrary competition.
Well, and I hate like arbitrary activities where you're just like nothing's happening. So, but my mind would wander because it's a sport where you just stand there and the ball never comes to you. And I would space out and then the ball would finally come over like 20 minutes later and I wouldn't be paying attention. And the gym teacher, this guy would be like, Elizabeth, Elizabeth.
Well, like, you're the kid on my team that would drive me nuts where I'm like, come on, we gotta win.
But I'm like, it's the game is so boring when you're kids and it's moving so slowly.
Right.
So I would inevitably be looking at like grass or something.
It's like the first baseball, the first year that kids get to pitch. Boy, the game really slows down.
Yeah.
My experience with teachers was very, it feels like the experience Bryn is going to have, where I'd be really shy for a second and then I'd, as soon as I realized people were comfortable with me, the spotlight would come out.
Yeah.
And then I was just charming teachers and friends' moms. That's my wheelhouse.
Well, it's funny. All the teachers at his schools were obviously like already charmed by Bryn because he already has said something weird to all of them. And the assistant teacher was like, oh, Bryn, he's funny, because she said he was talking to her and he was like, I'm so tired. And she was like, why? And he was like, I go to two schools. And he was talking about how he goes from daycare to preschool.
He's like a grizzled blue-collar worker. It's like, I got to go to my other job over at pre-K.
This is a good school. I'm glad to be here. I just, you know, I got a lot on my plate.
You know, it's tough sometimes, but I am happy to be here. I'm appreciative. Thank you so much. preschool teacher. So there's a few funny things that happened. One, the pre-K teacher seems really sweet, and she's getting her master's, and like she's seems
and
like a perfect.
You're
sort
about
of,
to insult her.
No, she seems like she's very good at her job and a very wonderful presence for a bunch of 4-year-olds. But like as an actor, as an improviser, comedian, it's been a long time since I've been in the audience and an audience where somebody is leading who has no idea how to like perform for the room full of adults. And I had no idea what she was talking about a lot of the time. And she was just like so nervously going through these bullet points in her head. And there was these things we were supposed to do that she never explained to us, like this worksheet we needed to fill out.
Well, that was the hardest for my like goody two shoes desire to please, because I knew there was like stuff we were supposed to do. Like you were supposed to fill out a sheet, draw a picture for your kid when they got to school the next day. And she wasn't explaining any of it. And I like other people were doing it. And I was like, we didn't get told what to do. Like it was like
it really was. She like maybe told one person and then other people started doing it. And then someone was like, are we supposed to do this? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay. And like we walked in and the previous session was leaving. No one said hi to us. But as soon as we sat down and started filling out the sheet about our child and just next to these other parents, that part of my competitive school brain turned on where I was like, okay, I got to look humble, but I also need to beat all these people.
Yeah, you're really showing off with your drawing.
Well, the drawing too also, I'm like, I do pretty good caricatures of people. And I started doing this in vaguely in the back of my head. I'm like, here's what I realized. And this was true very much in school. I was really nervous until I did something that impressed somebody. And then I was like, now I feel comfortable being myself. Because like maybe it's this super selfish, I have an audience now. Mm-hmm. The same sort of thing. As soon as someone was like, wow, that's a great drawing. And I was like, okay, I'm comfortable talking to parents now.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the same reason why Bryn is the kid that they need to like designate leadership roles to him.
He's like the line leader.
Yeah. He has to feel important so that he doesn't act out to try to get attention. It's like,
this is a big tool. I've been doing some like leadership training at Story Parts recently. And yeah, one of the, a difficult thing to deal with is like the know-it-all or like the backseat leader in
your
group.
You mean
us? Yeah. But like if you're leading something and you've got like the backseat director in your group, and like the best tactic for that is to give them an arbitrary job to be like, hey, I'm going to need your help. Can you take charge of this thing? Then they're like, oh, yeah, I know. My boss would do that to me all the time early on in Story Parts. He was like, hey, I got an important job for you. Will you make sure that everyone has the right color shirt on? I'm like, I'm on it. And it really was just partly getting me out of his hair. But I think Bryn is very much that kid. Was like, Bryn, we're going to need you to be the line leader today.
Yeah,
and then he's focused.
Yeah, they're like, he's like calendar helper. They're
oh
like,
boy, that's his dream job. Explaining days.
He loves to explain days of the week.
He can be a little nuts at home, but I can tell he's like us. Like, we do like rules. I think of you sometimes more as a, like, I was going to say rebel than me. But I think we both want to know what the rules are, and we follow them. And I think that's in the middle of our Venn diagram. You're just more skeptical than I am.
I mean, I cater to it in, like, a people-pleasing sort of way. Like, I'm like, well, I want to get this right. I want this to run smoothly. You want the attention.
Yeah, I do it so that everyone knows that I get it. Well, I'm also immensely uncomfortable if other people are uncomfortable. And the best way to make people comfortable is to just do it myself. Take care of everything. So that was the big thing.
That was the big thing.
This week.
What else? We're still having a little bit of crazy
Bryn. So last week, Bryn was huge tantrum. I will say, after we recorded that episode, I had a great week with Brennan Maven, where we really talked about his behavior and sort of talking about things early on. And it was way smooth until today. We went to this like local park's farm with the kids, and it was nightmarish at times, and I got real emotional. And I think a big thing that happened, like, both of our strengths and weaknesses, like, when they're a little bit aligned, we make it worse. I think I jump to threat of punishment way too fast. Mm-hmm. And you jump to bribery too fast. And when we do it together, Bryn knows that he's got options, and he, like, neither one of them
works
at all. Yeah,
but you were also today, like, breathing down his neck a lot about, like, doing things right, and, like, you're starting these fights a little bit. It's like...
Yes, I am guilty of that, but it's also the... When I'm alone with him, the rules are clear. Like, I don't... You think I do, but I don't lay down arbitrary rules. Like, it's very predictable with me.
No, because but this we morning... No, you were coming up with things this morning. I'm trying to decompress from a very stressful week. Our news cycle has been nonstop rape, and you have decided... I want to take a nice family trip to a farm, and all of a sudden you decide Saturday morning is your time to start instituting new rules and deciding that our kids suddenly need to eat healthy and we need to make sure that they're eating regular food. Like,
this is an arbitrary new rule?
It's not the time to start instituting it when I'm just trying to relax.
You know what?
You're
probably right. But this is something that we... As we were in the middle of it, I was like, Beth and I needed all of the major issues came over. Like, these are things we should have talked about before the moment we needed to do it. Food is the big one that I'm worried about with Bryn right now, where he won't eat anything at all.
Right. But like that's stuff you plan ahead when you're buying the groceries and the week and you're making the food. It's not like you're not like at a restaurant with a plate full of French fries, suddenly like nitpicking every dietary choice he's making.
Wait. You mean when he refused to eat the chicken tenders and all he wanted to eat was the French fries that he poured sugar on?
I literally don't care. Also, potatoes are a complete source of nutrition.
That's all he ate.
I don't care. For lunch. I was trying to get my kids outside, burn
off
some of
their
energy.
Yeah, but then you're bribing him to behave with ice cream later. And I was like, we can't give him ice cream. He didn't eat lunch. He's going to go even more crazy.
He did eat lunch. He ate a healthy lunch of potatoes.
The sugar on the French fries was... I mean, the first thing you did at lunch was Maven grabbed a sugar packet and you go, here, let me help you with that. And you opened
it
up.
Because I'm waiting at a restaurant with two hungry kids, and again, I'm trying to enjoy myself.
I get it.
You woke up this morning and you handed our kids sugar cereal and went back to bed, and it's like that.
I handed them Cheerios,
Honey Nut Cheerios.
Oh, okay.
That decision doesn't count. That's fine. But then, if I want to be relaxed around our kids, all of a sudden it's like the nutrition brigade.
I don't mean to blame you, even though I disblamed you. But in general, actually, a big thing we're going to talk about later is exactly this. So we won't get too far into it. But that's the dilemma we have, is that we're dealing with it piecemeal. And Bryn knows that, like, he's getting different things from us and he's pitting us against each other. Our laziness he is exploiting because they exacerbate each other when we're together. So it's a challenge that we're going to overcome. But boy, the big thing at the farm, all he wanted to do was jump in a muddy puddle, and it drove me crazy. I went straight to we're not going to get ice cream.
And then he's like, well, that's the other thing, is that I feel like you escalate it so quickly and so intensely that he's like you're like offering him a challenge.
Well, I stay emotionally calm until I had to pick him up and he punched me.
You were not staying calm.
I stay very calm in those situations until he starts He literally jumped, and I caught him midair trying to go full double feet in a mud puddle. I tried to explain to him that, like, it's going to make the car dirty, and then I have to take it in, and he doesn't want to hear it. And I should have said nothing. I think trying to explain to him why he shouldn't do something, I think, is the thing that exacerbates issues too quickly. That is where, like, I'm making the biggest mistake. I don't need to explain to him, don't jump in puddles. It's just, no, stay calm, and I keep him away from the puddles and ignore him.
Yeah,
is better.
It's just like you're so fixated on it, where I was like trying to distract him and change topics so he would be like, his emotional intensity would be a little diffused.
I agree with that part.
You are constantly like out of the blue. You're just like, here's another thing you can't do. Like, it's just getting him so worked up.
There's nothing arbitrary about the battles I picked. Like, I don't want a muddy car. Anyway, we just
you're like pointing it out to him. Like,
that's the problem.
He was walking with me. He was fully calm, and you were like needling him. You're like, there's a puddle coming up. He's gonna try to go in it. Like, it's just like you're telling him to be bad.
You're right in that. I have no regrets about stopping him from doing it, but I just need to shut up about it. I mean, I'm going to have to keep grabbing him because he's kept trying to jump in puddles, but I'm just going to not explain it to him anymore. That's my pledge to you.
Okay.
Right. He needs to have less snacks. He's got to eat real foods.
The other thing this week that I think is funny is that Maven more and more has been just making up arbitrary words for things. So she
she's killing it this week.
She just she sees something she wants. She doesn't know the word. She just makes one up on the spot. So Bryn was like handing us quarters, and she was like, "Give me that. Give me my gum. I want my gum. Give me my gum." And I'm like, "You mean quarter?" And she just digs her heels in. She's like, "No, I'm calling it a gum." She's like, "No, that's my gum." She also did, I was pulling out like winter hats and stuff, and she found these rolled up mittens, or rolled up gloves. So they look like sort of a jellyfish with the fingers hanging out the bottom. And she was like, "Oh, I need my jelly sock. My jelly sock." And I'm just like, how did she come up with that? Like, but
because a jellyfish would wear that as a sock.
I don't know.
It makes perfect sense. She's a goof. I mean, there's a lot of that, like, oh, this is a this, like the quarter. This is gum. She's like really latched. She's learned make-believe from her brother, you know, and it's like a less, he has like a nonsense sort of world in his head. It makes perfect sense to him. And he has all these, all objects have conversations with each other. And I feel like some of this is her doing an impression of that makes even less sense.
Yeah, I don't know. She's really committing to, like, it'll be like in the kitchen, she'll be like, "I want the kalo. I want the kalo." Like, she just is like, "I'm just going to name it, and it's your job to know what I'm talking about."
I mean, before they had words, they would do the same thing. They just go, until they got what they wanted, and it worked out for them.
It's just funny because she comes up with very specific words.
I mean, it's like, what motivated them to ever actually learn real words? Because they go, and eventually get what they want anyway. So what motivates them to actually communicate more specifically?
What motivates them? Communicating their desires clearly.
I know.
This reminds me, there was a guy we ran into at the preschool open house who had one child, a daughter there, and he was very...
The only guy who asked questions.
He was really sweet, really nice guy. He was very concerned about making sure his daughter doesn't watch too much TV. And
he was talking about how he eyes did at each other.
He was talking about how he did baby sign language with her as a baby, which we also did a little bit with Bryn, but it was just
like
funny.
A couple days.
Like, he was like, yeah, because he was like, "Oh, we really can't have our daughter watching too much TV." And we were thinking, like, our kids watch TV nonstop. So
they don't, as long as they can't touch a screen. Well, God, I'm so tired of talking about TV. I'm getting closer and closer to saying no TV on nights where just daddy's home. It's so nice. They're so sweet, and Bryn does puzzles. Anyway, I will say, like, he has one child who's four, and I'm like, could you imagine if we didn't have Maven and we actually just, like, still paid as much attention to Bryn as we did for the first 20 months of his life?
Yeah, he'd be even more of a monster.
Boy. This is already the theme of the episode. We really got to ignore that kid more.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? This is where we share some parenting-related facts and information.
All right. I got some info. Yeah. This one's pretty straightforward today. This I read on our own network's site, How Stuff Works. I got this from How Stuff Works. This is about kids. So obviously we know many, many, many kids, including our son Bryn, are very, very picky eaters. And I have found, and I think a lot of parents find that over like the first few years of their life, like their eating habits can change pretty dramatically. Bryn was a really good eater for a while. Like right now, Maven eats a lot of things. But then Bryn turned a corner and he is incredibly picky in what he eats. So children typically outgrow extremely narrow eating habits after a while. It's a natural part of growing up. But wariness of new food, also known as food neophobia, is part of an evolutionary adaptation designed to protect our ancestors from eating harmful substances. So once kids, and this actually makes sense to me, once kids get to a certain age where like they're running around on their own, I feel like their eating gets a little pickier, and that's so that they don't go eat random things they've never seen before in the forest and it's poison and they die. They eat what's familiar to them. And that's that's a big part of getting them into healthy food habits. So like their taste buds aren't fully formed. So they literally don't have the taste buds for all the foods adults eat. Basically, there's some super like simple, and reading this, I was like, well, boy, these are really obvious. But those are usually the most helpful tips, things you can do to improve habits. Because like Bryn right now, actually, the example in this article was like, it's not a problem that they're picky, but if it means a peanut butter only diet, that can be a problem. It's like, that's all Bryn wants to eat is a peanut butter sandwich. He suddenly got picky and was like, I'm not into jelly anymore. So he has not a ton of fruits and vegetables.
Well, my tactic has been recently, now that he's starting preschool, we've got these little Tupperwares he takes with the snack.
That's great.
Once he's got his snack in front of him, in front of a group of kids, and it's a routine, he doesn't have us around to complain to. So you throw carrots in there, raisins, whatever.
He does pretty well. It comes back mostly eaten.
Yeah, he eats pretty well when he's away from us.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good place to try to force him when he literally can't argue with us.
Exactly. So there's four really simple tips in this, and one of them requires foresight and time, and I think this is the least likely thing we're going to end up doing, which is one, let them help. Where like if you invest them in the process, like you take them to the store and you're like, all right, Bryn, we need to pick a vegetable, but I'm going to let you help me. So like, which one do you think is interesting? And if you could actually get him to pick and then, you know, take it home and let him participate in preparing it, it's far more likely. I remember my mom doing this with me at certain points where I was like, oh, maybe I am into whatever the fuck. Maybe I do like artichoke. Then you're invested in it because the eating part, like the taste of something is only part of it. It's also the smell and the visual image and literally the story of it.
Yeah. Well, I have noticed, I feel like they're finally getting old enough now where if I'm trying to cook dinner and they're like hanging around at my feet, I am trying to now like put them on a chair so they can see what I'm doing. And so I can talk to them about like chopping food or something.
Yeah.
It's just a nice distraction instead of having them like screaming at me for snacks while I'm trying to make dinner.
Yeah. Oh boy, yeah. It's gotten so much easier, but just trying to make dinner used to be so hard because they'd immediately be there screaming for milk or snack in the fridge. And now I just say like, nope, not till it's over, not till I have dinner, and they're used to that now. Or they'll get a banana, something tasty.
It's hard though because Maven Maven, you can tell sometimes when you pick her up from daycare, she's just so hungry, and I relate to her raw animal rage. Yeah. Like, you have to give her a banana or something, because you can tell her body is...
I'm not like this, but, like, when you get hungry, it's, like, a much bigger deal. Like, you...
Well, I do... It is actually, I think, a difference in women's and men's bodies, because our bodies are always trying to, you know, be able to support, like, reproducing. Like, uh-huh. Our bodies are always trying to remind us to be capable of that. So,
yeah.
Especially with, like, PMS and stuff. It's like... Your body is literally screaming at you. And men's bodies are different because it's like the, you know, historically, like hunter-gatherer societies, like men would be more like out there catching food. So your body is literally just better suited to be like on the go, running on low steam and like...
Yeah. Yeah, it's
burns, being leaner is
calories
just like
quicker.
Being leaner is more of a survival... it's more of a pro than a con for men. Like,
I have learned... because like having snacks that we talk about is having snacks around, or like I hate it because I'll eat it all and then I'll get fat. But so I'm like, just let's not buy snacks. But for your and my emotional well-being, we need quick access to snacks at a certain point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially when I was breastfeeding, you.
Oh yeah.
The amount of hangry you get when you're breastfeeding, and you're like, your body's not just hungry; it's just like within a matter of minutes, all of a sudden your body is like,
give me chocolate or I will kill you.
It's closing in on itself. It's just, it's insane.
Well, the next thing is tied into what we already talked about, which is making the food fun, which I think a lot of parents have tried to do. And I don't know that I ever have tried to make a meal fun for my kids. I've tried to make it edible and in front of them. But beyond that, I did make Bryn the number 4 shaped pancake for his birthday. That was the most fun food I ever gave him.
Well, I also
think
my mom
did that for us every year.
A lot of it, I think, at this point, because Bryn has gotten so crazy, it's just a matter of stocking the kitchen with things where whatever the thing that is most treat-like that we have is still fairly nutritious. So he's been going crazy lately for these granola bars that he refers to as chocolate bars. And they're still on the, like, this is real food end of the spectrum in spite of being not the greatest thing for him to eat.
Boy, that was another one that became an issue because we never talked about it. But, like, I made a big point to him that these are for pre-K. You do not have these at home. And then, like, I came home and he's eating one. He's like, and he looked at me and he's like, Mama gave me a chocolate bar.
But he was rolling a chair into the kitchen, going through every cabinet. And
no, I'm not blaming you. I never told you that I had that conversation.
No,
with him.
But I don't, it's not about the conversation. It's just that he, at a certain point, when your 4-year-old is climbing the countertops,
he's going to find it.
He's going to find it.
You're right. I mean, it's making the snacks healthy is an important, amazing step. That being said, number 3, limit sweets and snacks. This is where we have to have some sort of system. It's a little all over the place because I have a system. I give him things to diet him over, and then you give him snacks, and then he doesn't eat a meal. And this
but
is what our doctor...
That's the thing about having healthy snacks is then I'm like, you know what? It doesn't even matter if he doesn't eat the meal. I'm just... If the snacks are nutritious enough...
But the big sacrifice has been... like vegetables. Like he won't eat his meal. We're not giving him a snack of like fruits and vegetables.
Right. But he's also at an age where him and his friends, like for the most part, literally just don't eat vegetables. Like I think you have to supplement a lot of fruit and stuff. And like you find the one vegetable they like carrots or whatever, and go for it. Because it's not like, it's just... literally how little kids are. There's not like...
Well, here's the last part. Because, one, I think something my mom would always do, and you've done this to me, which is effective, which is just like it was an hour before dinner or whenever, she would just always make vegetables first and she'd go put them on the table in front of the TV while she made the rest of dinner. And I'd be sitting there watching TV and I end up eating an entire bowl of broccoli because it was just there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I've been trying to do with them with the carrots. It's just
that's
put
great.
It out before they have other things on their mind.
I think that's brilliant. So the last thing they say is, and this is where I sort of learned the most, is stick to it and keep in mind, like in terms of healthy food, getting them to eat these things and expanding their palates, is that stick to it doesn't mean insist. Forcing your kids to eat something won't do much good beyond some momentary nutritional value and will probably end up producing a person with food and eating issues. Many studies on taste preferences have found that the way we acquire our food preferences is through repetition, and that sometimes basically you can serve a food to a kid like 14 times before it becomes a familiar food. And that's the biggest thing, is that they're picky because they want to eat things they're familiar with. They have a history. And so just giving them broccoli and they're like, I won't eat it, isn't like, well, they don't like broccoli, so never give it to them again. The thing is, you keep giving it to that child and then it becomes normal. Because I had that big time. It was always something new that I was like, I'm not trying that. And then I wouldn't get that.
Yeah.
And broccoli was the one that I ended up loving because my mom would make it every single night. And I remember hating it. And then it was just eventually like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah. They're also just at an age where they're at daycare and all the kids are like pointing at things being like, that's disgusting.
Oh,
and
that's then the big word of the day.
Yeah. Bryn's favorite word this week is that's disgusting.
And I think it didn't help that he got some big laughs when he's like, look at that pig. It's disgusting.
Well, he said it to me the other day because we were reading this book called Romping Monsters, Stomping Monsters. And he was pointing at the monsters and he was like, that monster only has one eye. That's disgusting. And I laughed and he knew it was funny. So then he kept pointing at all the monsters and he was like, three eyes? That's disgusting. Boy, and then he pointed the ball in a row and he goes, one eye, disgusting. Two eyes, okay. Three eyes, disgusting. And then he just started listing numbers of eyes, and he's like, four eyes, disgusting. Five
eyes. Now we've trained our child to notice that someone in his class is different in any way. And
well, then I tried to talk to him about it for that reason, and I was like, well, it's not really nice to say things about, like, people who are different. You know, I was like, we can say it about this monster book because it's just silly, but we shouldn't like laugh at people who are different and call them disgusting. And then he got really like pouty.
He's like, you're ruining the game.
Yeah, anyway, that's his new word.
he told me today, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna take this toy away like I did to this. And he said a name of the kid in his class, and I was like, what? Were you mean to this kid? He's like, yeah, and me and my other friend, we were mean to this kid, and we got in trouble. And he was like, not thinking about what he was saying, and he was like sort of bragging about being a bully. And then I stopped, and I looked at him very seriously. I wasn't getting like angry. I was just like, were you being mean to somebody in your class? And I just gave him like the confident dad stare. And he looked at me with like a smile that slowly faded away. And he was like, yeah. I'm like, did you say you're sorry? He goes, I didn't say I was sorry. I'm like, well, that's probably not a nice thing that you did, right? He's like, yeah. And his like fun bit was going away. And I'm like, maybe I think you should be nice to him tomorrow, right? Don't you think that would be good? And he goes, yeah, okay, I guess so. And I was like, after a day of sort of getting enraged with him, it felt like a good parenting moment where I'm like, I'm being serious. I'm not letting this go.
Yeah. Well, I think
don't brag about being a jerk.
Again, I think this is a repetition thing where it's like, I had a similar moment with him. It's like, you have to sort of tell him it's wrong, but not get like overworked up because I think he wants to fight you on it. But it's just like, I want to assume, as in spite of his really aggressive personality, that if he just hears these things from us enough times over the course of time, mm-hmm. that he sort of will accept it as the truth.
Yeah, it felt, it stood out to me where I walked away and being like, oh, that felt right, in terms of it wasn't me going, I'm putting on like my top tier alpha male, where he's just reading into me challenging him. and he like gets scared or shuts down.
Well,
it's that also, doesn't work. Or if it's the I'm being overly soft explaining, that's not good, right? And it was that I'm talking to you directly, but I'm very, very direct and serious and calm and confident in what I'm saying. And he read that as he read that tone well.
Well, there's this woman, Brené Brown, who's a shame researcher. She's really well known for talking a lot about how shame is really harmful. And, you know, it's all the sort of like Catholic guilt stuff you remember of like just, you know, the stuff that makes people become alcoholics because they feel like horrible human beings. But she talks about guilt versus shame. And she talks about how guilt can be a positive thing because it's like motivating us to do better. So it's okay to feel guilty about something if you have sort of like a growth mindset of like, okay, that's not something I want to do again.
Yeah.
But shame is sort of just thinking not that the action is bad, but that you are intrinsically bad. So I think that's why we have to be careful when we talk to him about this stuff. And we've talked about this in the past. You don't say like you're a bad boy. You say like that was a bad thing you did.
Somebody wrote in. We're going to talk about that.
Because it's just, yeah, you don't, if you are too intense in reprimanding them, all they're seeing is like, you hate me. You think I'm bad. They're not learning the lesson.
That's the distinction. If he is reading, oh, daddy thinks I'm bad, that's not good.
Yeah.
But if I'm saying, hey, I'm showing you that this is important and I'm wanting you to think about what this is like for that other person, we're focusing on empathy for somebody else, then I'm not in the way of that process. Because we need him to think about that kid and that exchange and that social circle. But if I'm challenging him, he's just focused on my conflict.
There's a couple times today where you were like very quickly like raising your voice at him. And I feel like the message he's getting from that is like,
oh, I
lost my
temper.
Daddy doesn't like me. We're in a fight. Like he's not, I don't think he's like, it's hard for him to glean the message from that.
100%. And this is a perfect contrast of doing it successfully and getting upset myself and failing. Because it started fine and then I got, you saw me when I put him in the car. Like I was in a rage and I was just doing everything I could not to scream. I'm over it. So let's give him broccoli every day. Is that the lesson?
Sure.
Put smiley faces on broccoli. That's all he gets.
This next segment is called Would You Knows. This is where Peter and I give each other hypothetical parenting situations and ask each other how we would react.
All right, Beth, you ready for this one? This is a dumb one. I just thought of this 5 minutes ago. Okay. You come home from work. Okay, you're going on a trip next week, right? I'm going out of town and then you're going out of town. So let's say you get back from LA and you walk in the door and Bryn walks up to you. And Bryn says, Beth, listen to me. This is going to sound crazy, but I'm Peter. Bryn and I freaky Friday'd this weekend, and we've been trying to figure it out before you got home, and we don't know what to do.
My immediate question would be, Bryn, I don't believe you. Why is Peter's face not covered in granola bar chocolate?
Then you go into the kitchen, and that's exactly what's covering Peter's face. Because he's in there, he's Bryn, and he's just been eating all the food.
Oh, so this was Bryn. This was Peter as Bryn who was telling this to me? And
this is me in Bryn's body.
Okay.
Explaining it to you that I'm Peter and we have a serious problem. We touched something together. We peed in a fountain. We wrote in a magic diary. Whatever had happened, it happened. And we don't know how to undo it. And we probably have to learn a lesson before we undo it. But in before we learn that lesson, how do you deal with a week, let's say, of Peter-sized Bryn and Bryn-sized Peter?
Okay, well, Peter-sized Bryn is definitely going to have to go sleep in Bryn's bed so I don't have to deal with this thrashing all night.
Yeah, it's going to be some dangerous thrashing.
Yeah.
That's your first concern, is how you would sleep.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't, this is like, I feel like I'm immediately going to be like wrestling Peter-sized Bryn. Like I need to call like authorities or something because
no one will believe you. I'm going to adjust it. you know that it's going to be cured in a week. You got to get through a week. What do you do?
Okay, so I know you don't agree with these parenting tactics, but Peter Sizebrand needs a lot of bribing right now. There's going to be a lot of TV.
How long is that going to work? We have a whole week we got to get through.
Well, then we probably got to drug him because I can't get him outside and run him around and burn off calories or whatever.
Because he'll keep running forever.
Because he's...
But Peter Sizebrand, really out of shape. So he probably won't make it that far.
I don't know.
Probably Peter Sizebrand would probably have more endurance.
Let's not forget how regular, normal Peter... usually injures himself in improv scenes, going out of his way to perform feats of strength for the audience.
Yeah, so, okay, Peter Sizebrand is definitely going to get injured because he doesn't realize that falling down when you're a grown man is like a bigger deal than him falling down every second.
Wait, can you explain, just as an aside to the listeners, how Bryn describes your appearance and hair?
Oh, yeah. So this is a conversation that he had with my mom, with his grandma. He said, Grandma, something about beards. And he goes,
she was like, something about him being 35.
No. She goes, do you like beards? He goes, yeah, when I'm older, I'm going to have a mustache and a beard and glasses and a little bit of hair on top. That's how he describes a bald man. And then grandma goes, oh, yeah, when's that going to happen? He goes, when I'm 35. Because that's how old I am.
Just a little bit of hair on top.
A little bit of hair on top. What a positive way to say dad's bald.
I'm glad he's resigned to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, almost all my uncles are bald. I knew it was happening. I panicked about it when I was 18 and someone looked over my shoulder and said, hey, you going bald? And I was like, what? And then the next day I was like, oh, well, I'll be funnier. So.
Oh, well, men can still get what they want in this world.
Hey, you're into it. Was I bald-ish when you met me?
You're starting.
Was it, you were like, oh, this guy's going bald?
It wasn't really like something I thought much about. I think that's the funny thing about the men's perception of going bald is that it's like this huge detractor because it's something I very, very rarely ever hear a woman even talk about. It's not like...
I've never been worried about it. Take that. Don't worry about it. Beth, she just wanted to find like someone who looked like a salty sea captain. And I was like, I'll be that pretty soon. Anyway... Call my work, will you? I'll explain this when I'm a Bryn-sized Peter.
Call your work.
Call my work. Tell them I'm sick this week. Let's get them out of pre-K. And then let's have a bizarre, fun time.
I mean, the thing is, you as Bryn, if you went in and did the Story of Pirates podcast as Bryn, as a precocious kid, you'd be having the time of your life.
Oh, my God.
Story of Pirates would be like, oh, my God, a kid we can work with and he'll take direction?
That's the greatest idea. It's like, I have to use this week to record, like, the performance of a lifetime is my 35 years of performance experience. In a hilarious four-year-old body.
Meanwhile, I have your adult body muzzled in a closet the whole week.
Oh, boy. Maven would be terrified. And that is Would You Knows? Now it's time for Listeners Want to Knows. This is where we reach into the mailbag. We got one here this week from Cheryl. Cheryl writes to us and says... Hi there. I'm writing from the Great White North, a.k.a. Quebec, and I have three kids. They're older than yours, almost 13, almost 10, and 7. But listening to your show brings back so many memories, good and bad, from when my kiddos were younger. I love it! I just listened to the one about Bryn being in tantrum mode all the time. That was last week's episode. We're recording really close to release date. I remember that phase super well. What really hit me about that episode was when Bryn asked if he had been a bad boy. When my oldest was about 6 months old, I went to a parenting workshop. Since I knew nothing, that's a good idea. maybe we should do that sometime. And they talked about something super interesting. They said we should try to avoid labeling kids as good or bad, but rather focus on the actual behavior. For example, you're being bad versus you're making a bad choice. The latter doesn't have quite the same shame factor. Plus, it gives them something to think about improving that you can talk with your kids about together. If I categorize the child as bad, they may feel that they are inherently bad, no matter what they do. Similarly, if you call someone a good girl, it sets up that dichotomy. Instead of saying that they're good, a compliment then on something real. Their compassion, their kindness, their sibling behavior, whatever it is. This is something that we pretty much are able to do with our kids when they were young, and ever since then, it's such a trigger for me when I hear parentings calling their kids good or bad. Love to hear your thoughts on this. Love the show, Cheryl. I will say in that episode that I was trying to say that I recognize that you should not call him a bad boy.
Yeah. Well, okay. So we already kind of talked about this. I think we agree with Cheryl. I do think that's a really interesting point she added about calling someone a good girl, because I think that sort of relates back to me wanting to like impress this preschool teacher. Is like, I think as a woman and specifically someone who grew up as like the shy kid, it was kind of just like expected that I would like fade into the background and not be a problem. And this is something I'm still trying to work on, I think, recently, is like forgiving myself for not being perfect in every situation, allowing myself to like be emotional if a situation calls for that, and like be human.
Uh-huh.
And that's really hard. I think for a lot of women, it's just like, it's really expected of us to sort of like be doing all this emotional labor for the people around us and like taking care of them and just like push our needs down. It's hard. Like,
there is a connotation to that, because I when I read this, that was the thing that made me want to read this, is that like, oh, should I, because I say good boy, good girl to them a lot. And yeah, it's a connotation to what a good girl.
I've caught myself doing this to Maven too. Like when Bryn's tantruming, it's like, I already know she's so used to being sort of like the quiet background one like me, and I'm sort of like, I've turned to her when he's like having a tantrum and we're trying to get to the car. I'm like, Maven, I just really need you to be good right now. Like, I'm like, I need someone to help
me.
Well,
as we know, she is, until he calms down, and then she won't walk.
She waits for his tantrum to fade, and then she's like, my turn.
Well, I think she knows that her tantrum will be ignored if his tantrum is going on, because his is the more damaging one.
Yeah.
So she waits for the spotlight to be hers.
But I also have to say, again, you're going to hate this, I think she's an empath like me, and she takes on the intensity of the situation. She's like all worked up, and then those people have finally calmed down, and she's like, well, you worked me up, so now I need to express this emotion.
Yeah, I don't know that you're wrong. That's all I'll say on that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, I already agree that you'd never say you're a bad boy. It is what you did. This is not good behavior. The actions themselves, not the person. And I think that's really interesting. They like, don't label someone as a good girl, good boy. But I think it is far less damaging.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. Maven did start saying this week after she got her hair cut. They both got haircuts. They were both very cute. She was being really sweet, and I kept calling her cute. And she, at one point, she was walking around, she was just like, I'm cute.
Oh,
and I was like,
I don't talk about her appearance ever.
I know. Well, ever. I don't. It's definitely not my primary like thing I say to her, but it's like, it's hard now when she clearly is like starting to be aware of her appearance, and she likes ponytails, and she likes dresses, and she loves pink. She loves pink so much. So I like...
She got so mad at the ice cream store when they didn't have pink spoons. She wouldn't eat her frozen yogurt. I had to go and be like, do you have pink spoons in the back? And they're like, I'll go look. And then she was like, ah, now I can eat my frozen yogurt.
Oh, yeah. She's really into our pink spoon all of a sudden. But this, I'm trying to see that as like a natural phase of being a girl. We already talked on this show about...
Some girls.
About how pink... Little Girl's Eyeballs, our Little Girl's Eyeballs episode talks about this.
Episode one. But their cones. It's their cones.
So I don't want to deny her reality. Like her preferences deserve like a degree of respect, I think. So that going forward in her life, she's like, my likes, my desires
are her own.
Are mine, and I'm allowed to have them. You know what I mean? So I don't see it as all bad, but I'm like I should cool it on calling her.
There's
cute.
A study, I think we're going to talk about it next week, of how girls, how they view themselves these days is far improved in terms of like they see themselves as potential leaders and good at math and science compared to older generations. But the big difference is that they feel like what they look like matters more to everyone else than it does for boys. And like, that's what stops me from going, you're so pretty, like ever. Cause unfortunately the world looks at them too much that way. And so I want it to be out of their head as much as possible.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard though, because I think like, I don't want that to be your whole thing. And I really like, I kind of love that my experience growing up was very, like, not focused on that.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, it's like, sometimes I feel like my experience growing up was so not focused on that because of, like, financial restrictions and just not being able to, like, explore different clothing and makeup options and all those things that I wish, part of me wishes, like, I knew what I liked or, like, I knew, like, I wish that had... That was like a little bit more open to me of exploring.
I know what you mean.
Like,
yeah, but it's. I think there's always a.
Like, I think
that might
okay.
always be a
it's
grass
okay.
is always greener situation.
I know. Yeah, I'm not. I don't think I'm like severely damaged by that or anything. I just think
no,
like
that you're damaged for other reasons.
I'm very damaged. I think that like it's okay for little girls to explore that stuff. Like,
yes.
If it's fun for them, they should get to explore that. Like, it's like you shouldn't be forcing it on little girls who don't.
Yeah.
But if they themselves are pursuing that and are interested in it, like, because Maven has like put on like tinted chapstick and she looks at herself in the mirror and she is so excited. She like giggles maniacally and it's like,
yeah.
Okay, this is someone who likes that stuff. Like, and maybe she won't like it in 2 years. Maybe she'll be over it and then we'll let it go. But I feel like now, while she is excited by it, I want to let her enjoy
Absolutely.
That.
We're not stopping her from liking anything. And I just think it's, and we're not really pushing it either.
Right.
I think we're doing a good job talking about it, makes it easier. But before we end, I just want to say, Beth, you're so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my God. That'll do it for this week's episode of We Knows Parenting. If you want to reach out, send us a story, a question, a would you know scenario, you can email us at weknowspod@gmail.com or call us on our voicemail. You can find that number on our website, weknowsparenting.com, where you can also buy some merch.
Yeah, please find us on iTunes and like, subscribe.
Find us on Apple Podcasts.
That's
the proper channel.
Rate and subscribe. It really helps us out if you give us a quick rating and review.
And write a review. Makes us just feel good about ourselves.
We feel so good if you say even the most slightly kind thing about
us. If you're just like, not shitty, I'll be like, great, I'll take it. I also want to plug this week, very exciting. As you know, I'm also one of the hosts of the Story Pirates podcast, an excellent children's entertainment podcast where we adapt stories written by kids into bizarre sketches and songs. Check out that show. But we just released our very first musical album, an album of 12 incredible songs inspired by stories written by kids. And not just because I work for that company. It's incredible.
We can attest our children love these songs. There's one called Happy Fart Out Loud Day. There's other less disgusting ones.
There is one about farts, but I promise there's only one about farts. And there's incredible songs on them. On the iTunes charts right now, check it out. I'm very, very proud. If you want to see hear track 12, I play a character who loses their mind. It's very Shatner-esque. You should check it out. Wherever you get your music, wherever you get your podcast, check out all these things. I'm going out of town this week. Beth will be out of town next week, so we'll probably have some weird over-the-phone episode next week. It's going to be cool. Until next time, bye.
Bye.